This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Guillaume Cordonnis. How are you, Guillaume?
I'm good, thank you.
Excellent. You're the technical director here at Mirabeau, and they are a Provence Rosé producer. We spoke to some of your colleagues last week about how the business started. But this week I want to talk a little bit about some of the more detailed aspects of making Provence rosés. And I think most listeners should know that Provence rosé is made through a process known as direct pressing. Do you want to just tell us what direct pressing is? And then there's a couple of unusual things that I wasn't aware of that we're going to explore a little bit more.
I would say that direct pressing is the technique to do a real rosé.
I disagree with that, but that's fine.
Real rosé from Provence.
Provence, yes, from Provence.
Now, because some people are sometimes talking about bleeding technique.
Yeah.
And I have to remind them that bleeding technique comes from red area production.
Mm.
And it was done previously to concentrate red tank.
Yes.
So it's to produce a second product.
Yes.
But in Provence, we produce very few red. We want to produce rosé. Mm. So we don't use this bleeding technique.
Yeah.
We use a direct pressing.
Yeah.
To get this light color, this light extraction, and this is the fastest way to press to extract and to have a color of must.
Yeah, so just for the listeners, bleeding is usually where you press your grapes, you start your fermentation often, and then you'll take out some of the juice.
To concentrate the red tank.
Yeah, and then what you're left with is a lot more skin to juice ratio, so you make a really big, gutsy red, but the byproduct is a rosé wine. But the downside with that is that your objective is to make a red wine, so
yes.
You're picking the grapes quite late to make a nice red wine, but then for rosé wines, you normally want to pick the grapes a little bit earlier to get that acidity.
That's why I say the main technique and the only technique is direct pressing for rosé wine.
Or as they do in Taval, is to do a little bit of skin contact, you know, a little bit of pre-fermentation
maceration. Yeah, but we have skin contact during all the harvest process, during in the press and during the transport of the grapes.
Yeah.
Skin contact can be a very short or long time, but long time, sometimes you have to carry your grapes in some place for 1 hour. So it's a skin contact during 1 hour.
Mm.
But to get the juice, there is one technique, is direct pressing.
Yeah, or as they use in Champagne, blending.
Yeah, but it's not allowed here to blend.
No, it's not allowed in here. But it is allowed in Australia and America and in Champagne. So there's at least three or four techniques. But the one we're talking about in Provence is...
I will say it's not red rosé. And you have some Champagne. You have some Champagne houses which are doing like a rosé from Provence process. They are pressing red varietal to get the color.
Mm-hmm.
And do their rosé sparkling wine.
Okay. No, so one of the things I always thought happened, and you correct me on this, was that I always thought, for example, if you're in Champagne, you use things like Pinot Noir and Meunier, and you press them quickly, you land up with a white wine. And I've always wondered, in direct pressing, if you didn't do some maceration, how come you don't land up with a white rosé, a white wine for Provence rosé? And you're saying that it's...
The fact is, we have plenty of different varietals in Provence. The main one are Grenache, Syrah, and Cinsault. And Syrah is the one which is giving a lot of color when you do a direct pressing, even with a very short process time, very short skin contact. You get a lot of color.
Mm-hmm.
With Cinsault, for example, I used to see some direct pressing with Cinsault, and you get a color of the must, which looks like a white must.
Mm.
So this is the same with Pinot Gris or Pinot Noir.
Yeah.
You can get a lot of color. They are not varietal well known for their color capability.
Yeah. And you don't use Mourvèdre or anything like that?
You find some Mourvèdre in some winery, in some vineyard. Mourvèdre is more known in a Bandol production area. Which is in the rules of the appellation. If I remember well, you need at least 55% of Mourvèdre in your Bandole AOP Rosé.
Yeah.
But in Provence, Mourvèdre is in the rules of production, but it's less produced than in the Bandol area.
Yeah, fair enough.
You can find some Mourvèdre, some Tibourin, some other varietal. But as I said, the main one are Grenache, Syrah, and Cinsault.
Yep. Now that makes sense. Okay. And you're saying that the Syrah often gives you the color that you need for your rosé.
Syrah is the one which is giving the most color juice.
Yep. Do you find after production, because we tasted your wines earlier and some of them were very good, but what I noticed is the color was pretty consistent all the way through. Mm-hmm. So do you find when you're doing blending to get a consistent color is actually one of the key blending objectives?
It's before blending. It's when selecting the wine, the juice, we are looking for a specific color. Not too much color, not yellow color. We are looking for the really pink, pale color.
Mm-hmm.
And after, as we have plenty of different tank wine bases of with the right color, we do the blending for the different cuvée to focus on the mouth profile, on the nose profile, on the flavor.
Okay. All right. So I want to talk about two or three things particularly with you. One's called stabulation. Another is we're going to talk about enzymes in the extraction process. And the final thing is something you guys do in your vineyard to decrease your use of copper sulfate. Mm-hmm. Let's start with the copper sulfate because I think that'd be easiest. Because copper sulfate is a pretty nasty chemical that's used and sprayed on vineyards to manage mold and mildew. Down here in Provence, the weather, the climate, there's a lot less disease pressure than, say, in Bordeaux or the Loire Valley, where there's a lot of disease pressure. So you don't need to use as much copper sulfate, I would have thought.
That's right. In Provence, we have a very good weather against this disease. So even with that, we are looking on the estate to decrease the quantity of copper and sulfur. And because, as you said, you can find them after in the soil.
Mm.
So we try to fight against this by having, for example, a cover crop on the soil, but also to decrease the quantity of sulfite and copper by using an auxiliary to stimulate the vine in their protection. I will say this decoction, this infusion of plants, herbs, like horsetail, for example, is not to fight against the disease, but it's to stimulate the vine.
Mm-hmm.
To stimulate the natural defense of the vine.
Okay, so what you're looking to is increase immunity of the vine to the diseases.
Like a vaccine.
Yeah, the materials you guys were using was willow, nettles, and horsetail.
Yes.
Horsetail, I think, I've seen it before. It's almost like a bamboo, isn't it? It sort of grows like that.
It's a very light, thin piece of plant.
Yeah.
And then we use it to, as I said, to stimulate...
What do you do? Just grind it up and
put in a tank, and then we warm it to do a, I would say like a tea.
Infusion.
Like infusion.
Oh, okay. And then
this infusion, we add it to the spray machine with a mix of sulfite and copper.
Oh, okay. So you're using it, and then that way you're not increasing the humidity in the vineyards anyway. So
it's done in the same time.
Okay, so you're fighting mildew and then trying to strengthen the vine's immunity to it at the same time. Okay, and how do you find that works? Have you done any testing to see if it's a good idea or?
It's difficult to compare because every year is also different. Different disease pressure. We don't have what we need to do this scientific study. Selecting one or three row, do some measurement. So we prefer to do it and... See, in the long time, in the long period, if the vine develop natural strength against disease,
mm-hmm.
Instead of doing some trials, which can be a waste of time as the size of the estate.
Is it quite common to do this down here in Provence?
I would say it's more and more developed, but it's still a smaller quantity of people doing that. Because when you are doing it means you are in organic, but in the good way of organic process, you want to decrease the quantity of copper and sulfite. And so not all organic producers are in this way.
Yeah.
So you reduce the quantity of people thinking this way. And after, you have to say, okay, I will do something more. And for some of people, it's more work, it's more, depends a little bit more money at the beginning. So it's a few people doing this decoction and infusion. But this is our job also to talk about that, and also through the region certification, region process, to let it know by other producer.
Yeah, okay. Let's talk about extraction, because we talked about direct pressing. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we talked about while we were testing your wines was enzyme extraction.
We were talking about the color, and the color is in the skin. It's due to the anthocyanin.
Anthocyanin.
And but the anthocyanin have to go out and go in the juice.
Yep.
And how does it work? But when you open the berries inside, it's not color.
That's right.
So it's something that doesn't work naturally, like only with contact. There is something to destroy some cellular, to let the anthocyanin go out, to destroy the
cell walls.
It works by enzyme.
Mm-hmm.
And enzyme works well at high temperature. So there is a way to decrease the enzyme extraction of color, is to decrease the temperature of your grapes and your process. What we try to do in Provence is to harvest when it's cooled down during the night, to have the coolest temperature as possible. Then during the press, we do have a cooling down system, close to 10 degrees of difference between enter and exit the temperature. So we decrease the temperature of the grapes, of the mix, and when it's pressing, you press something which is cooler.
Mm-hmm.
So you decrease the activity of the enzyme, so you decrease the extraction of color.
Yeah, yeah. The problem with decreasing the extraction of color, and we've seen this in Provence rosés, is they are very, very light, but when you extract color, you also extract flavor. And the problem that you get is that if you don't extract the color, you don't get much flavor at all. And that sort of comes up to this thing that we're going to talk about called stabilization, which is different to stabilization. When we were talking about this, I got quite confused. But stabilization is different to stabilization.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is to extract some flavor from the skin. So you've
it's not from the skin, because when you do the stabilization, you don't have any more skin.
No, well, sort of, yes. So you do your pressing at a cold temperature to minimize the enzyme extraction of the skins.
But you still have some color because you crush the berries before entering the press.
That's right. That's right. So you've got a little bit of color, but you don't necessarily extract a lot of flavor. But stabilization is the process of leaving the wines on what we call the gross lees.
The juice.
Yeah, the juice. Sorry, juice, not wine. We haven't fermented it yet. So we've got the juice coming out of the press.
Yes.
And the juice that's coming out of the press has lots of stuff. It's not squeaky clean. It's cloudy.
Exactly.
It's got lots of things.
Everything except the skin and the seeds.
Yep. But there's little bits of skin fragments in there that's just tiny.
Especially because you also have some filter during all your press system.
Yeah. Okay, so you've got the wine into a tank after pressing. Hopefully you've got a nice rosé colour, or you will have a rosé colour when you finish your blending. What is the object of stabulation?
The purpose is to produce the precursor of a certain family of flavour, which is called thiol.
Thiol?
Thiol. Thiol. T-H-I-O-L-S.
Thiols.
And this is a big family which has the flavor of grapefruits, for example, exotic fruits, some veggie flavor, as you can find in a Sauvignon Blanc from New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the purpose, to get this precursor of flavor.
Yeah, because the thing about grapes is that...
But not all the grapes are capable to give this flavor.
Yeah.
You can have it on a Grenache and Syrah, some on a roll also, but Cinsault, for example, it's not very interesting to do this technique with Cinsault.
Okay.
Cinsault is naturally poor in flavor potentiality.
Okay. So the thiol, I call them thiols, you call them choles. Thiols, choles. I think that's a French-English translation thing. So the idea is to extract thiols, which you said are precursors.
Precursor of thiol.
They're not flavors, because I always, in my mind, I think of some of these precursors as often bound up with sugar molecules. And they're not volatile, so you can't smell or taste them. But
it's a complex process which combines sulfur molecule.
Okay.
During all the process. What we will look for, what first step is to extract the potential molecule. And after, you decant and you have to follow it, to be also very careful during all the process to avoid oxidation.
Mm-hmm.
Any excess of oxygen can destroy all this precursor. During fermentation, there is another key point which is very important, and it's when you are feeding the yeast, for example. If you do feed at the wrong time the yeast, you can waste and screw every work you've done before about the precursor.
Okay, so let's see what's happening. So we've got cloudy juice, mm-hmm. and we're leaving the juice at a cold temperature.
Yes, less than 0 degrees.
Less than zero.
You have to be negative, to okay. avoid any fermentation.
And you're leaving them and you're hoping that the material in the juice is going to pass thiols into the juice itself. The stuff that's giving you the cloudiness.
Yes, in all this cloudiness that you have the precursor,
yep.
the future molecular.
So how long do you leave the juice at this minus temperature?
The minimum which works is 7 days. And some people are keeping it for different reasons. Some of them think, okay, it works better at 15 days, but there's no scientific evidence of that.
Mm-hmm.
But less than 7 days, it doesn't work well. And some people, and sometimes you can keep it longer, end your harvest, and to have everything in the tank,
yep.
and then you start all your fermentation later.
And you said the flavors that you're encouraging are things like grapefruit.
Then you have the veggie character, like you can find in Sauvignon Blanc from New Zealand.
Yeah, yeah.
Cassis,
blackcurrant.
Blackcurrant.
I did notice in some of your wines, and I was a bit surprised about it, because we tasted quite a lot of rosés. And in a couple of the wines, I did notice two flavors that I wasn't expecting. One was grapefruit, and one was watermelon. Would they be a sort of a thiol?
Yeah, but because in our wine, we don't have this only unique profile to get exotic fruit, because it's too much linked to the vintage. What I mean is, sometimes you don't have a lot of these exotic fruits. But if you are doing a cuvée with this profile, and the next year you cannot find the same profile.
Yeah. You want consistency.
How do you do your cuvée?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
your consumer? You say, oh, it's not the same.
Yeah, yeah.
What we are looking for is to select a bunch of different flavor, different style to do the blend after. And therefore, you find some of these little exotic fruits in a cuvée, in pure, for example. But we want this some touch of it, not 100% exotic nose.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we want to have a little bit of exotic, a little bit of white fruit, yellow fruit, having a complexity in our blend.
Okay, now that makes sense. How many winemakers do stabilization?
Well, a lot of cellars are doing that in Provence, more and more. A lot of cellars, they are trying to do some tanks with this profile. As I said, to have complexity in their blend, in their cell, in their cuvée.
After we spoke about it, I looked it up on the internet, and it seems that some Kiwi producers in Marlborough are doing the same, or experimenting.
Yes, it's done with a Sauvignon Blanc. It works.
Okay, that's cool. And the thing about stabilization is that you need to, if the gross lees sinks, you can go into, my understanding is, it's like why you do batonnage. Often is, because you get into sulfur chemistry.
We don't want, during this process, the sedimentation.
Yes.
So we want all the juice in contact with all the fluffy lees, all the gross lees.
Mm.
So to mix it, the easiest way is to send by the bottom some dry ice, bubble, and mix everything. You do it every 2 days or every 3 days, just to mix it a lot.
So the dry ice drops, sinks to the bottom, and then it evaporates, creating all those bubbles. Yeah, yeah, and then that mixes it up.
Yeah.
And dry ice is just frozen, it's solid CO2.
Yes,
yeah, so it doesn't create any oxidation in there as well, which is nice.
It's more protection after oven in the tank.
Yeah.
In the tank.
And how long do you leave the stabilization for, Sarah?
The stabilization?
Stabilization.
7 days.
Seven days
it works.
Yep, and then you just...
And then you rack off the light juice.
Yep. And then you're ready for fermentation. One last thing I want to talk about just before we close up here is bag and box. You guys at Maribo, you don't really target the Scandi markets. That's not one of your...
Talking about the Scandinavian market, it's a monopoly market most of the time. So they are launching tenders. They are launching tenders. So they are looking some for ecological support, like bag-in-box, light bottle. They are looking for price, for organic. And for Mirabeau, yes, we have the organic, we have some quality. I'm not a fan of bag-in-box for premium rosé wine. Because in a bag-in-box, even for a white, sometimes it's difficult. Because after bottling the bag-in-box, you are losing half of your protection of sulfite after 3 months. To the plastic box inside the card box, you have a lot of exchange with air. So you have a lot of oxidation, and then you decrease the quality of your product.
In the old days, there's a number of different types of bag-in-boxes, though. For a while, you used to see them with aluminium foil around the outside, which is a very good idea.
It's not as a bottle. You will always lose your protection.
Okay.
Even if you use acid ascorbic to protect more against oxidation, after a while, it's not the wine will change too fast compared to a bottled wine.
Yeah.
And if you are in a premium category, you don't want your consumer to say, okay, the wine is not good as 2 months ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. Guillaume, I think we'll wrap it up there.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.